Hello and welcome to Pod 7 of the official Palace Pod. I'm Chris Grissom from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube and the Palace app. Last time out, we had Dean Austin telling stories about his Palace career, so give that a listen if you haven't already. But this week, the Premier League is back. We've got Richard Shaw on how he helped turn Aaron Wan-Bissaka into a Premier League right-back. Richard's former assistant, Dave Reddington, on becoming first-team coach. Roy on living with a Palace legend, Statman being negative. And then, as always, Roy's weekly presser. But first, Martin Kelly's interview for Premier League Productions, in which he recommends which Palace players you should pick in your fantasy Premier League team.
Martin, Premier League back this weekend. I think you're 3 points better off this season than this time last season. How do you assess the start that Palace have had?
I think as a whole, our pre-season was better. We obviously had the last season to work with Roy, and then we carried a good end of the season last year into this one. So pre-season went well, and you know the last couple of results haven't. But we've as a team, we know what philosophy we're working on and what tactics we've got to do as players and jobs, roles and stuff. So we're fortunate enough to have a really good manager and management here that are helping us progress as players.
Did the international break come at a good time in terms of stopping the rot a little bit with 3 consecutive defeats?
I think in terms of the way we set up to play, we set up similar in most games, so it wasn't as we changed something and that's why we got beat. It's just we were missing a couple of key players and the results haven't gone our way. Liverpool game, we was unlucky. Southampton, we started off not great and it was 2 sides that didn't really want to lose, but they got the luck as such to start the second half with mistake from us, and we've got to do better.
It's been quite an unsettling start, particularly in the back line with Wan-Bissaka's suspension and then James Tomkins picking up the injury in the warm-up at Watford. Do you feel the international break has given you a chance to kind of settle things down in that sense, ready for now to go to Huddersfield?
I think the international break, you can... If you ask all the players, we don't like having breaks as such. In the Premier League, we like having routine and playing every week is good for us, but it gives us a chance to work on the opponent, I guess, for a little bit longer, and we've done that, in the past week or so. We haven't had all the players there because they've been an international, but we've got a strong, nearly full strength squad now, and we'll go into Huddersfield fighting like we do every Saturday for our manager and fans.
James Tomkins' injury has meant you've been back involved in the starting 11 since then, the last couple of games. It's never nice seeing your teammate get injured, but it has meant you've had this opportunity. You must be hoping that it can continue now.
I think as a Premier League footballer at this level, that injuries are going to happen and there is games where you're going to be called upon. And it can be last minute of a warm-up before Watford away, which was last time. It can be, the start of an international break. You could have 2 weeks to prepare yourself, but you've got to know your role. And with Roy and his management here, everyone knows their role in the team, and it's easy to put on, a shirt for Palace and fill in that role and try your best to give as positive effects as you can.
Huddersfield this weekend, what are you expecting? I know you faced them very early on last season. They really came at you, gave it to you. They were newly promoted. What are you expecting this time?
I think it'll be a difficult game there. They've not had the best of starts. I think a point worse off than us. So it's a tough game there at home. Their fans are going to be right at it, ours will, as our travelling away supporters has always been really good, and it's a game that we've got to try and put what we've worked on the past couple of weeks into practice on Saturday.
when you went there in March, I remember it was a huge, huge win. You could see how much it meant to the players, and it also ended a similar kind of run. I think it was four or five losses at the time. You must be hoping that you can go there and do the same again this weekend.
Yeah, I think we take every game in the Premier League as a tough one. That's why it's the league it is. That's why it gets so many fans across the world watching it. There's no game that you can guarantee a win as such, especially at a side like ours. And we know what we have to do to win. That's what we try and set out to do. And, you know, the rest is up to how the game pans out. We've got to go in with a game plan and try and stick to that to 90 minutes.
Huddersfield is one of your former clubs, and it was a very short spell that you had there when you were at Liverpool, a loan spell. But does that ever add any extra incentive when you come up against a former club?
I don't know. Usually, it's always quite memorable going back to Anfield. But as you said, it was a couple of months I was there at Huddersfield, and couldn't have thanked them enough for giving me the opportunity at such a young age to play, you know, proper men's football as such, instead of reserve team football. So it was a great experience. I needed it at that time, and it only benefited me going back to Liverpool at the time.
You mentioned the start that Huddersfield have had. It was, I think they conceded 9 goals between the two games against Chelsea and Manchester City. Are you ready for them to be coming at you and potentially looking at this fixture thinking they need to pick up points here?
I think, you know, at the start of the season, we all understand the teams where you look at and you think we need to try and get points there and points at home. But because the Premier League is so tough, we look at every game and we try and concentrate on our tactics that we work on. And we know that if we do that to the best of our ability, we have a really good chance of winning games. So I guess we'll do the same on Saturday. We'll take what we work on with Roy and try and get the points that we need on Saturday against Huddersfield.
The game comes in time with Roy's 1-year anniversary with the club. What's it like being working with him the last 12 months?
Yeah, it's been really good. I think if you ask any of the players throughout the squad, he's only benefited all of us. We know our roles. That's what players want. We want some structure to our play, and that's what we've got with Roy. He's a world class manager. We're all privileged to have someone of his stature working with us, and we also believe that we've got the players who can work and show their talent best working under Roy. So he's obviously a great figure to have at a club who wants to staple their name in the Premier League and progress as such, like we do. Everyone's ambitious, and he's brought himself with his experience and all his staff along with him, who are really highly experienced as well, and he's brought that lift that Palace and us as a squad really needed.
At this moment in time, we don't have confirmation whether Wilfried Zaha will be or won't be involved this weekend. This record, as I'm sure you're sick of hearing, does exist, where the team haven't won without him since September 2016. I just wanted to get your thoughts, your reaction to that. Is there anything to it? Why do you think that record does exist?
I think you only have to look at Wilf play to understand that the impact he has on games. He can take the game by the scruff of the neck sometimes when we're not playing well as a team and create some out of nothing. It's the same in training every day, so we understand how dangerous Wilf is. Everyone watching the game understands that as well. And without that, it's taking your best armoury as such and playing without it. So we know that we've had tough games when he's not been available, and we've had tough games when he has played, and he's been the man of the moment. So we always want Wilf, who is our best player, playing for us, and you know, that's thankfully up to the medical staff to keep him as fit as possible for as long as possible throughout the season.
If he's not involved again this weekend, what can yourself and the other players do to cope without him and get over the line and put an end to this record?
Well, I think especially since Roy's come in, and you know, since I've been here, we've added really good players to the squad in positions that we've needed to, and we've got goals all over the pitch if we, you know, take our chances. And it's not as if we're not creating chances in our games. We're creating them. We've just got to, you know, we understand we've got to put the chances away, and that's what the players coming in who are filling in when Wolf is injured are trying to do. So we know on the whole as a squad we've got a really strong squad, and with Wolf it's even stronger, but you know, without him we've still got a strong enough team to get the results we're hoping for.
Has fantasy football been mentioned much amongst the Palace players? Van Aanholt in particular, given he's created his own mini-league and tweeted about it.
Yeah, I think we all know about the fantasy football. All our friends who are at home, you know, working throughout the week are talking to us about their teams and our teams, who's fit, etc. So it does get talked about. Yeah, it's quite... we've got a mini-league at the... within the squad here, so it gets quite competitive.
Well, you might know the answer to this then. Which Palace player do you think has scored the most fantasy points so far this season?
If Wilf would have stayed there, it would have been him, but I don't know, it's probably going to be the goalie, because he's played the most, and we got one clean sheet, didn't we? So
Wayne Hennessy.
Yeah, why not?
And which Palace players would you recommend fantasy managers sign, and why?
I think everyone here got Aaron at the start of the season because he was really cheap. It's his first proper, you know, season starting. So I'd say Aaron and James Tompkins is another good shout. I think he was 4.5 million and he's a threat in the box for corners, but... probably Max Meyer is a big good one going forward. I think he'll get quite a few assists.
Martin Ronald Kelly there. From one occasional right back to a full-time one. Earlier this year, we made a feature on Aaron Wan-Bissaka's conversion from a winger to a right back, and Richard Shaw played a massive part in it. He's such a good talker, it was tough editing so much out of the final piece, so here is the full chat.
First saw Aaron at the National Sports Centre at Crystal Palace in their most salubrious of surroundings. It was a lunchtime session, I think it was at the school where they all came out, and I had him in the morning. I think there was about 8 or 9 of them. The first impression of Aaron, I think, had his hair braided, and he was this tall, thin, skinny guy, very quiet, but technically was very good in at that age. But it was quite a tough group. In terms of they're quite boisterous, they had a lot to say for themselves, but Aaron was always the quiet one out of the group. But he's probably up there in terms of causing trouble, there's no doubt about that, but he was very quiet with it. But looking past that, he was a very good footballer. And I really enjoyed the year I had him in the under-16s. He was terrific, to be fair, towards the end of the season, and he was a big part of them being a highly successful group.
And then you were hooked up with him again in the under-23s? Yeah,
I had a year with him in the 16s. It was a couple of times he never turned up for games. A couple of times he was late and he'd phone me and tell me he was late. But you sort of just persevere with that. They're youngsters. That's going to happen. It happens now. And I'll tell you, he always had a really good temperament at a young age. And then when I took the 23s job a year and a half ago, obviously he was in that group. I saw bits and bobs in the 18s when I was over assisting with Ken at times. And then... then I had the fortune to bond with him again in 23s with that same group I had in the 16s. So I knew the group really well. And we went, like I said, really young, and he found his sort of age and found his level. And ever since then, he's prospered and he's done really well.
And starting off, so he was playing on the wing, wasn't he?
Playing on the wing, yeah. When I had him in the 16s, he was a left winger. He went right wing. I think he's played a few positions. He's one of these people, Aaron. He's a good football player. I think you could play him as a midfield player and he'd still do a good job. But that's where we played. We did a lot of work with him sort of defensively. Going forward, he was never going to be much of a goal scorer, Aaron. I can't remember his record, but he made a few assists. But he was always a real solid 7 out of 10 sort of player you could rely on week in, week out. And you know what you're going to get with Aaron. With some players, there could be a 9 out of 10, and some players can be like a 2 out of 10. You never know what you're going to get. But I think with Aaron, he's sort of always going to get a consistent and honest display. That is for sure.
Where do you think his career was going as a winger?
As a winger, I still think he would have a career. I've got no doubt about that, because I just think his attitude towards the game of football was getting better. We had our troubles in the 23s at times. There were times he didn't really fancy doing a gym session or maybe an afternoon session. And again, it's one of them things you just have to work with them. And I always thought with Aaron, you have to give him a bit of a leeway because he's finding his way. Circumstances away from the pitch at times. You don't know what's going on with young lads. And I always think sometimes you've got to err on the side of caution and stick with them and keep with them. And I'm glad we did that with Aaron, because there were times he drove me mad, I'll be honest with you. But he always had this innocence about him, and I think it was a few of the other boys as well. He's quite easy led. But what he has done in recent months is he's really focused on his football. I know away from football he's a very happy guy. He's really focused on his football, and I think you can tell that now.
So tell the story of how he became a right back.
It's for Kevin Keane, funny enough. We'd done a training session. I think Kevin wanted a right back for the session. And I'd seen Aaron over there the first team a few times. I had no hesitation. There's a few of them that when the manager asked for players, there was a few he'd always put forward, with Aaron being one of them, because you knew he could handle the football. You knew he could handle the stage of training with the first team. So we had no worries with that. And then I think Kevin was after right back, and then we offered a few up, and Aaron went over there. I don't know if he initially went over there as a right back, but Kev came over after the session. I said, how did Aaron do? He's like, he's done really well. You know, he's defensively, Wilful struggling to get past him. He's causing a few issues over there, and a few people talking about him. He said, have you ever tried him at right back? So I said, look, we'll have a look at him in training, and then we'll have a look at him in a game, and we'll see what happens. But I looked at Aaron a couple of times in training, and Aaron's got these long, spindly legs. So when you think you've beaten him, he just comes back and his tackle comes from nowhere. And he always seems to win balls which he's got no right to win. And it's not like he just kicks it out of play. He retains possession for you as well and gets you up the pitch. So watching him, you know, I knew he was good defensively. And it would always give the opportunity as well, with green grass in front of him, to have a different option in attack as well, because you knew he had that going forward. But defensively, he was very, very sound. And then we decided to play him in a few games, 23s last year, and that's when we had a really good look at him and started working with him in the training sessions morning and afternoon.
I suppose it was good for him when Frank de Boer took him away to Hong Kong. Is that good for his development?
Yeah, because I think, you know, with Frank playing a three, Aaron was a ready-made sort of wing-back as such, because we had that mix of number two and number seven. But he really learned his trade, I'd say, from February onwards. I think we played Charlton away at Greenwich, and he played right back, and he kept getting caught with the ball inside him a few times. But this is young players, and you just got to persevere with them. And that's why I'm always big on individual development of the boy. And it would have been the easiest thing would have been to not play him at right back and think, nah, he's had to go right back, it's not quite working. But we stuck with it. And, you know, we had him out in the mornings, we had him out every afternoon, practicing defending, position, shape, heading. To be honest, I mean, the times we've thrown balls in the air, myself and Dave Reddit, and we've worked on his head in far post, balls up the line, in possession, out possession. A lot of work has gone into Aaron as a right back. And sometimes, for the sacrifice of the results last year at times, but we just want to persevere with him. And now you've got, in my opinion, a very, very good footballer. You really have, and I think it's there for all to see.
He got his chance, because some players have been out injured. But what an amazing set of games to come in and make your first appearance against Spurs, Man United, Chelsea.
It's brilliant. And do you know, myself and Redders would talk about it. We sit in this office and we say, Aaron's playing against Man United. And we both just started giggling like little kids. And we're just so proud and so pleased for him. But one thing he never did, it never fazed me. I remember watching the game, and because I know what Aaron's temperament's like, I mean, everyone you talk to, Aaron, if he was his friends and that, he's such a cool customer. Nothing fazes him. So I knew that game would be fine. Absolutely fine. So he not only played that game, he played the previous games where he played Tottenham, Chelsea. I thought them three games speak for themselves, because they're games you can get up for. Not that you pick and choose your games, but they're on TV, everyone's watching you, the atmosphere, the game, speaks for itself, really. The one I thought might cause a few difficulties, Huddersfield away. And having played at Huddersfield away, there is this north-south divide, and you know, it's a windy day and it's raining and etc. And I thought, away from home, you can hear every comment because it's not a full house, shall we say. But that's a game I thought, it'll be a tough one for Aaron, that. Be a really tough one. I think if he comes through that, he'll be okay. And he did come through it. He actually played very well. He played very well in the attacking third as well. So he's got a bright future, very bright future. But again, he needs to still carry on with working hard and doing everything the senior pros say and the first team staff now say. You know, he's got to really keep with it. And I think he will do. And I think you've seen a real change in Aaron from 16 up to now. You know, he's sort of grown from a sort of young boy, shall we say, into a man. And I think he's starting to grasp exactly what professional football is all about.
How much of an inspiration is he to the players in the under 23s and the under 18s?
Well, he is, because he's given everyone a pathway. He's given everyone, hope's the wrong word, but he's given everyone an insight into if you do work hard and you do play well and you do be professional and you do work in your gym and you do say your please and thank yous and you do all of this and respectful, you have got a chance of being a footballer. But it takes more than talent to be a footballer. And I think Aaron showed that. And I think what Aaron's done as well is sheer perseverance as well. You know, he's worked very hard at the position he's worked at. He's been out every afternoon and he's worked hard at it. And, you know, through hard work, you do get a bit lucky at times. And be honest, you know, with Wardy being injured and a few boys, Timothy maybe being injured, you get your chance. That's football. But when you get your chance, you've got to take it. And I felt Aaron's certainly done that.
And finally, how does it make you and Dave feel? Does it make all your hard work in the past year and a half feel worthwhile?
Yeah, really good question, Chris, to be honest. And it really does, because you sit here, and like I said, you know what I'm like. We've had these conversations before, and you know, if you lose a game, everyone's get panicky and that. But I look at the bigger picture, I look at the development side of it, and you know, I'd sacrifice all them games Aaron played right back and we didn't do too well. I'd sacrifice all them games for what Aaron's done. And that, for me, is development. And to watch Aaron now, you know, he's 4 or 5 games in and he's got his call up with England under 20s, it's all worth it. And that's sort of why you do it. Because I've been where Aaron's been, coming through as a youth team player, reserves and in first team. So I know how difficult it is. And all I can do is pass on my advice. Be there for the guys if they want to chat, what it takes to be a footballer and how much hard work you need. You say the same message day in, day out. Do they listen? The good ones do. Yeah, the bad ones will fall away, unfortunately. But yeah, you feel immensely proud of what Aaron's achieved so far, but it literally is so far. And hopefully he will have a long and successful career. And hopefully the guys below that we have now will see that, and hopefully that will give them some inspiration.
Perfect.
No problem.
And if you haven't seen the full feature, just search Aaron Wan-Bissaka on YouTube. A man who Richard mentions there is Dave Reddington, who was his assistant last season. But now, Dave is the new first team coach after the departure of Stephen Reid. Here's his first interview after being appointed. Dave, first of all, congratulations on being the new first team coach at Palace. Just get your reaction to that.
Obviously delighted. For someone like myself, started coaching about 15 years ago, and you sort of get to a level where you sometimes reach a plateau and obviously hopefully opportunities arise. So really pleased that the club have given me the opportunity to step forward and make the step up from the under 23s into the first team.
And for those that don't know much about you, tell me a bit about your career. First of all,
my first back to playing days, I started off at Stevenage. Where I first started my first coaching role, where I was only 20 and started taking their under 18s, which was interesting, sort of thrown in at the deep end there. From there, I then started to coach here. Took the first coach role was about 14 years ago, where I took the under 12s here. In that age group, I had Johnny Williams, believe it or not, and then proceeded to then take 15s and 16s here before I went back to Watford. Where I went on to take the older age groups in their professional development phase there.
And then you got the step up to the 23s, that was from you working with Richard Shaw?
Yeah, so come back here after my spell at Watford and come back with a role, which was a year we went up, with a role which spanned across different age bands. It was looking after professional development phase coaches. It was delivering within the age groups in the academy, and then also taking the older age group in the 23s, which I always thought would push me along with my coaching.
And last season, obviously a great season for the under 23s for you and Richard.
Yeah, great season. Obviously winning the league was nice. It's not really something that we set out to do. It was obviously winning is an important part of a player's development. But we always tried to make sure that it was player-centred, making sure that players were playing in their rightful positions. And winning a league in the 23s is quite difficult because it tends to be a bit of a juggling act in terms of your team on a weekly basis can be thrown around. So at weekends, sometimes you're scampering to get the team organised, which is all part of your development as a coach. But obviously, Shorzy gave me the access to the sessions and the organisational part of the group was really important to me moving forward.
And then over this summer, you're just expecting to come back and carry on with the same job. When did you find out that you wouldn't be?
Yeah, it was about a week before pre-season started. I got a phone call from Dougie. I was doing a school run, and he just briefed me on what the situation was and what the role would be, and to expect a phone call from the gaffer. So obviously then got the phone call from the gaffer, which was nice, and said that he and Ray believed that I could step up and do it, which was really nice. And obviously from then on, straight into pre-season.
Yeah, what was that like, pre-season out in Sweden, first of all?
Brilliant. First and foremost, I think you look from a pre-season training camp perspective, you look for the environment to be right, which was perfect. You look for your principles of play to be put into the group, which was bang on. And then obviously you want to get back with everyone with a clean bill of health, and which we did, with a view of obviously three or four games left to complete your pre-season.
And what was it like for you making the transition from coaching academy players to first team players?
Completely different. You have to learn really quick. They know their industry inside out. They will see little faults in your session if there is one. So you almost have to plan your session from the top to the bottom meticulously to make sure they can't find any holes in it, really.
They're quite competitive, aren't they?
Very competitive. They cheat a lot as well. So at times you need a full-time referee in training. But you just have to go with it and get on with it.
And what have you learned from Roy and Ray so far?
Obviously, they're vastly experienced in what they've done. So you're constantly picking up little nuggets of information that you bank and you write down in your little black book and you remember as you go forward. But first and foremost, I'd say they're two really good guys. And I couldn't be making this step with two better guys, really, in terms of the way they treat people.
Is it exciting for you working with such a high quality of player that Palace have got at the moment?
Yeah, brilliant. Obviously, the squad's really competitive when everybody's fit. You sense that the players want to keep their place. And going forward, you look to think, well, hopefully we'll have a successful season.
And a player that's doing really well at the moment, someone you had a massive role in his development, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, you must be delighted seeing
to watch his progression in such a short space of time. I think he's still bordering line. I think he's only played 11 Premier League games or around that point. I think there's been a lot said about Aaron, but I would say that obviously him changing his position was pivotal in what he did, but it was Aaron that bought into it. And if Aaron at such a precarious age in terms of 19, 20 and most people being asked to change position, a lot of kids wouldn't have done it. So for me, Aaron's success is down to Aaron, and Aaron bought into everything. If Aaron hadn't bought into it, then Aaron wouldn't be in the position he's in now. So for me, it's all down to Aaron.
And looking ahead to the rest of the season, see the last three games in the league haven't gone quite to plan. What do you think? What improvements do you think we need to make?
I think from me being new into it, looking at the Premier League, how ruthless it is, how competitive it is. Every game we've played, we could have won, lost or drawn. And it's such fine margins that are borderline winning a game, getting a point or losing. So it's something that you look at and it's hard to suddenly look and think what we can get better, because there's been an opportunity to also win every game that we've played in. So it's very tight. It's a very hard league. And you've got to make sure that every single game you're completely focused and ready for it.
So Red is already enjoying working for Roy, who has now been at the club for a year. Seamless link there. I chatted to Roy about that first year, and in an anecdote we're saving for a future video, Roy told the story of how he came to live with former Palace player and manager Steve Kemba.
We've seen Steve Kemba around, he still scouts for the club. What is the story about you and him? Did you live in the same building?
Yeah, we did, just after the war. Steve's a year and a half younger than me. It's his 70th birthday, I think, this December. I always remember his birthday, Steve, December the 8th. I don't know why, but I always remember it. And his father was a bus conductor. My father was a bus driver, and they worked on the same bus route, and they became friends. Both at the time were living with their parents or their wife's parents. I can't remember whether Steve, it was his dad's or his mum's parents. In my case, it was my dad's mother that we were living with. When Dennis Kemba found this house, which had been divided into two in West Croydon, and suggested to my dad that he take the upstairs part while they took the downstairs part. So we found ourselves in the same house, a year and a half's difference, and we stayed there until Steve's dad changed his job and they moved. I think they moved to Balham, if I remember correctly, but I couldn't be quoted on that. So really, from the age of, I think I was about five, maybe Steve around four, until I was 4 or 5 years we lived together.
We'll hear more from Roy shortly, but before that, it's time for Statman to give me some positive stats ahead of the trip to Huddersfield. I'm a Statman. Right, this week I'm in the boardroom with Statman. I don't know how they let you in, but yeah, we're in the boardroom, which is right next to the trophy cabinet, which you had to squeeze your way past to get in.
Yeah, too many trophies in there for me to get round, to be honest, Chris. It was a struggle.
Yeah, a lot of golfing trophies in there. All right, let's have a look. This week, we are playing Huddersfield Town, away from home. What can you tell me about Palace and Huddersfield?
Well, first things firstly, Chris, I've been on the show now three times.
Got a jingle.
That is fantastic. You know, we didn't see that one coming. What I will say, it's not gone so well for me. You didn't have me on at Fulham, and we got that win. You've now had me on three times. I'd say I'm probably quite a positive person. I've been positive with my stats, and it's not really coming off yet, is it? We've lost every single game.
No, it feels like every week you say, if Palace do this in the next game, then that will be a record for the first, and it never happens.
Absolutely right. No, you know what? And I'll dig out some positive stats of how great we are against the opposition. You know, game one against Liverpool that you had me on, Tompkins and Sacco, 14 games unbeaten. Weren't they unbelievable? Lost that game. Watford, 6 games unbeaten at Vicarage Road. Lost that game. What was the last one? Southampton, Mark Hughes, never won at Selhurst Park. Lost that game. So do you know what I'm going to do this time?
No, I don't, because we haven't chatted about this yet. What are you going to do?
I'm going to get really negative on you, Chris. Okay? So last show, you had that taste of fly in your mouth.
Yes.
Yeah. Think back to that moment, you know? What a horrible moment that was. What a negative time in your life that was, okay? I'm going to throw some terrible stats at you. We're all going to get down. We're all going to think we're going to lose to Huddersfield. And maybe we'll pull it out of the bag and get a win.
Okay, go on. Ruin my day.
Okay. So, let's start. I'm not going to lie, actually, it was quite difficult because we've actually got quite a good record against them. But let me get negative on you. So, number one. So, obviously, now we've lost three in a row, conceding two goals in each game. So, you know, if you're looking at us with form, not looking great. Let's hark back to that last game. Big Ben Teke. Now, Opta weren't very kind to him in that game. He had, they classed him missing as four big chances, which is the most of any player in a single Premier League game for 1.5 years. You're going to ask me what classes as a big chance, aren't you?
I'm too busy wiping away tears. This is miserable. what classes a big chance?
Big chance. Opta say it's a situation where players should reasonably be expected to score, usually in a one-on-one scenario or from very close range. And he had a few close range headers, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I work for the club, I'm not allowed to be negative, but carry on.
Let's throw a negative one. So we've Huddersfield have lost their last two matches in all competitions against us, which you think that's a positive. But in all the times we've played against them, 43 times, they've never lost in three consecutive games against the Eagles. So history is with them, not losing this game. And I'm going to end with one. I mean, I was struggling to dig out the negative ones. But in the 43 matches we've played against Huddersfield, they've outscored us. They've scored 55 goals. We've scored 47 goals.
You're not looking happy, are you?
No. Have you got anything? Come okay. on, just one, please, right, okay. one, go on.
So let's, I didn't want to, but let's get positive, shall we? Okay, I hate doing this.
Let's play some party music now. Okay, go.
Okay, here we go. Positive stats coming up. Crystal Palace, number one. Okay, played 43 times. Actually, we've beaten them more. They might have outscored us. We've beaten them more. We've won 14 times. They've won 12. Positive stat number one. Number two, Crystal Palace have won three of their three top flight matches against Huddersfield. So we've got a 100% record when playing them away from home in the top flight.
Away from home. Okay, good. Brilliant.
So that's a positive one. You like that one. You're starting to smile now, Chris. This is good. Stat number three. Now, Huddersfield, they're not scoring many goals, are they? Not scoring many goals at all. And they haven't scored, in fact, in any of their last four league games at the John Smith Stadium. Not much entertainment for the Huddersfield fans at the moment. And if they fail to score against us, it will be their worst scoring record at home since 1972. And just on that stat of not scoring, Huddersfield have scored the least goals of any team that have played in this season and last season with just 30 goals. And I'll end with a positive and a negative then, okay? Start with a positive. Huddersfield have failed to win in any of their last eight Premier League matches. But I'm trying to get negative on you, aren't I, so that we win.
Yeah, go on, neg me.
And that is that they've never gone nine games without winning a game in the top flight. So history would say that they're going to win.
Wow, brilliant. Thanks for that. Are you going to Huddersfield?
I'm not, because I'm not as big a fan as you, is what you're going to say. No, I'm not going. Shame on me.
Well, I'm working. I'm working it. You're not working it, though, no. I suppose we don't know what your job is, so...
Exactly, exactly. I'll get the stats, though, for you, Chris. Okay. That is a promise.
All right. Off you go to polish the trophies. Why did he call me Crease?
Crease, 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 Crease.
Play the press conference.
Congratulations on the one-year anniversary, Mr. Palace. I haven't got your cake this time.
Good.
How quick's the year gone? And also, tell us about it. How much have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's gone quickly as such. I mean, I suppose it has. But I have enjoyed it. There's no doubt about that. It's been great to be back on the grass every day or... every day but one during the week, and working with a group of players on a daily basis, you get to know them so much better. You get a chance to work on your ideas and your principles so much more. So after a sort of five year absence from working day to day, it's been great to be back. And yeah, the year I suppose has gone quite quickly, but it's gone very smoothly, so I haven't really given time too much thought. It's just been a question of doing the job on a daily basis.
Has it gone better than you expected?
You never know what to expect when you take a job on. I mean, I've always had a lot of respect for the club and its fans, and you know, it's a very well supported club. I always thought that even in the blackest moments there might be some light at the end of a tunnel, and that we proved last year. And I think we probably have improved as well as a club and certainly as a football team, but there's still a long way to go. And the thing is that we're in a very, very competitive league, and the moment you even stop for 1 second to maybe look back at what's gone on and maybe even congratulate the team or the players or the people at the club on what they've achieved, all of a sudden you're going in the wrong direction. So we've got to keep our feet very much on the ground, and we've got to keep our eyes fixed very much on the horizon rather than on the past.
The squad was looking strong in training. I've just mentioned a few individuals. Is Wilf Sahar, is he back in the squad for Saturday?
It's his first training session today. It was debatable whether he should train or not, but he was anxious to try, and the same applied to James Tompkins. So it was really good to see them back out with us again, but we'll still have to wait until tomorrow and see how they react to tomorrow's training session to see if they're going to be available, because both of them, if we listen to our medical department, you know, are coming back certainly as early, if not earlier, than should have been expected.
Christian Benteke?
Well, he's got a niggling knee injury. He's had it for some while. It kept him out for a short while, if you remember, during the pre-season. He felt it and had to miss some time in our training in Sweden. And I'm afraid that still is an ongoing issue, and it's being dealt with. So at the moment, he won't be available, certainly for Saturday, and we'll have to wait and see when he will be available. But there's no timescale on that injury at the moment.
If Wilfried Zaha doesn't make it, is there an extra challenge there for the players to possibly say, we need to get a good result here without always relying on Will?
Sure. I mean, I think we said that, or I said that, the last press conference before the Southampton game. It's an opportunity for the players to put that statistic behind them. They really want to, but until such time as we do win it, then Will can sit there happily knowing that he is the man that's got to play if we're to win a game. But I don't think the other players will be happy with that. You know, we know it's a team game. They know that there are going to be matches when Will, for some reason or other, is not able to play. And they certainly are in no position or have no desire to accept this game is a lost cause simply because Wilf isn't with us. They're going to believe, I'm sure, they can win without him. But until they do, I will sit here in every press conference and answer the question that here's a fact, what do you say about it? And I can't say much more than it is a fact and we're working on it.
Max Meyer, he's looked good in passes when he's come on. And how close do you feel he is to starting games now in the Premier League?
Yes, I mean, both him and Cheick Kouyaté, two players we brought in. Jordan, of course, made his first team debut from the start the other day. So we've been very happy with all three of those, and I've got to say that both Max and Cheick are, in my opinion, ready at any moment to go in. But up to now, I think the other players who've kept them out have been doing a good job. So the competition's very, very healthy. But everybody knows that the positions are contested now, and if you want to keep your place in the team, you've got to perform every week.
Such a wonderful run at the end of last season, and it was a memorable game at Huddersfield winning the game. And I remember the players and yourself were with the supporters. Do you remember that being such a special game last season?
Yes, because I think it came at a time when we'd slipped. We had a very tough run of fixtures and we had slipped down, and had we lost that game, it would have put us in a much more perilous position going into the last games of the season. So it was an important victory, but it was also a very good performance. It was a very disciplined performance. We met a team, of course, in a similar position to ourselves, badly needing the points, badly needing to get away from the threat of relegation. And we gave a very disciplined and well-organised performance up there. And as a coach, it was one of those performances that you do feel very proud of, because the players were able to do all of the things that we work on every day and try to do well.
Speaking of fans, you have an excellent relationship. We have, obviously, talks are still going on with the club and rehousing of the Homestead Fanatics. Mm. Did the players notice maybe a slight change in the atmosphere against Southampton? Have the players talked about it?
No, they haven't talked about it, certainly in my company. If there were any change in the atmosphere, it would have also been largely down to the fact that we didn't play well enough to really galvanised the crowd. I think in the last 20-25 minutes, when we, you know, got on top, if you like, of Southampton and at least threatened their goal quite a lot, I thought the fan support was very, very good. But I'm hoping there'll be a resolution here. I know the club's working towards that. But the point is, we do have a fantastic fan base, both with the Fanatics and without them. The fan base is very good, and we always feel that we have a vociferous and a very, what's the word? I was going to use the word fanatical, but I mean, certainly we have a support where it's all about the club, it's all about the team. So if it was quieter during the first 45 to 60 minutes, I think a lot of that, unfortunately, was down to the fact that we didn't do well enough to galvanise the crowd. It's got to be a two-way thing. You can't expect crowds to pull you through difficult moments unless you're giving them something or showing them something which they feel they can relate to.
One more for me, just on Huddersfield, and obviously David Wagner kept Huddersfield up last season. Is it a possibility it can get extra difficult for a second season for a manager who's got a promoted side up, because people seem to have greater respect for them and know it's a tougher challenge for side going there?
Well, it was an excellent job last year, there's no doubt about that, that he did and his staff did and the players did, and everyone at the club must feel very proud of, you know, getting promoted and being perhaps underdogs and yet staying in the league and getting a chance to show that they deserve to be there again this season. The second season is difficult, but I've got to be honest with you, I think the third, fourth, fifth and sixth seasons are difficult too, because every time you're not going forward in this league, you're definitely going backwards. And I'm sure that they are very much aware of that. They'll want to be better this year than they were last year. They'll know that's important to do that. And of course, they are in that group of clubs, and there are many of us who can never seriously think at the start of the season, well, don't talk relegation to us, because, you know, we're going to be nowhere near that. There's only very few clubs in the league, I think, that can be strong enough or confident enough to say that this doesn't happen to the likes of us. It does. And the second season syndrome that we've referred to it as is undoubtedly a factor, but a lot of the teams that have gone down, I mean, West Brom was a lot more than two seasons, Sunderland was more than two seasons, so everyone's got to watch out, I think, and I don't think they'll need to be told that Huddersfield, they'll be pretty much aware of where they are and what they need to do, and we respect that, and if we're going to get a result at Huddersfield, we'll have to play well.
Sorry, very quickly, Conor Wickham. I've had a few fans asking about Conor Wickham's fitness update. How's he getting on?
Yes, he's making some progress, I think. He's still not training with the team. He hasn't trained with the team for well over a month now. So I don't see very much of him, to be honest. But there's some talk that he might be returning to training in about a week or two's time. And then we'll see how that goes. But the problem with Conor has been in the past that there have been a few moments where he has returned, but for very brief periods of time, because then he's got injured again. And so it's not someone I'm used to seeing very often on the training field, unfortunately.
Nice to see you again. Thank you.
Okay, pleasure.
Thank you, Emma. Roy, hi. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, is he fit? I think a lot of people were surprised to see him missed out of the under-21 squad over the international break. So,
well, he played. He played in the under-21 team.
Oh, he did play both matches?
He didn't play both matches, he played the first match.
The second one.
And then I think in the second one, from what I understand, the coach made an awful lot of changes. So a lot of the players who played in the first game, which I think was going to be the one that he considered to be the hardest one to win, because they were playing Holland, I think that a lot of those players who played in the first game, which I suppose he regarded as his first team, were rested in the second game to give guys in the squad a chance to play against Latvia, who obviously were considered a weaker opponent. I mean, considered a weaker opponent. Unfortunately for Latvia, they are a weaker opponent. Holland are stronger.
So we can expect to see him this weekend?
He's fine, yeah, he's fine. Okay. He was fine. He came back today and he enjoyed it very much. He was very happy with his call-up. He was very happy with the game and the way everything had gone for him during the under-21 get-together. So everything's very, very positive in that respect.
You mentioned with Huddersfield last time out, you met a team badly needing the points. They've conceded 9 against Chelsea and Manchester City. So are you ready for them to come into this match probably with the same approach, seeing as you're a team potentially outside the top 6?
What approach? What do you mean the same approach, right?
In that they badly need the points going into this match.
Oh, of course, yeah, of course. I mean, they're tough games, those, when you play Chelsea and Man City, and, you know, there's no disgrace necessarily to lose those, because you're expected to lose those if you're not in that same little ballpark where Chelsea and Man City find themselves. It's a home game for them against a team that they'll regard as a team in the same area, if you like, of the table as they are, and I'm sure they'll be doing what they can to get the 3 points, so we'll be very much aware of that, but it's up to us to show them that we are also as anxious to get the 3 points as they are, and then hopefully it'll be a question of the performance on the day deciding, and then it's up to us to give that performance.
With it being a year since you arrived here, how do you think this squad now compares to a year ago when you picked them up?
I think comparisons are difficult and, you know, even slightly dangerous, you know, because a lot goes on in the year and you take things for granted and, you know, your memory fades to some extent, and the further on you go, the more magical the period in the past appears to be. So one has to be careful. But I would like to think that we've made steady improvements during the course of the year. I think the players we brought in this summer in particular, but even in January with Alexander Serloff, they're the people who are the right types. They're the right types for the club, the right types we're looking for to help us go forward. But it is very much a question of making certain that we never ever take our eye off the ball and that we never ever believe that we've got any God-given rights to win football matches. We've got to fight for every point that's out there. But I think the squad we've got is fully aware of that. And there will be the odd game, like the one against Southampton, where we'll all come off the field feeling we can do better than that. But in a 38-game season, that is going to happen, unfortunately. We've got to make certain it doesn't happen very often.
The wins you picked up last season were largely against teams sort of in and around you in the table. Having lost to Watford and Southampton, who would fall into that category, how important is it that you win this one?
Well, I think Watford are top at the moment, aren't they?
At the moment.
they didn't have a bad result last time out, did they? So, you know, so the... I think that Watford have had such a good start of the season, we can't really regard that as a team in the same area as we are at the moment. Strange enough, some of our best performances have come against some of the top teams, I think. But they haven't. Once again, the statistics are going to beat me on this one, because you'll say, well, yeah, you know, but you didn't beat Liverpool, and you didn't beat Man United, and, you know, you didn't beat Chelsea, despite the fact that you've played well against them. So I think some of our best performances, both home and away, have come against the top teams in a way. So I don't personally subscribe to the theory that we can only do it against the bottom teams, because we've been so close on a couple of occasions to getting great results against those teams, only to be, you know, robbed by some cruel twists of fate in those matches. So in terms of performance, I think we're capable of giving those performances against both bottom and top clubs. And we know, certainly as a coaching staff, but I think the players too, we know the parameters that we have to play within and the standard we have to reach to get good performances. And I think if you get good performances, eventually you'll get results too. And I think that's what happened to us last year. We had a spell playing some top teams around the Christmas period, where we were very unlucky to come away having been beaten. But at the same time, we didn't go away thinking, well, we're playing badly. We went away thinking, well, we were really unlucky there. We could have got points, and that helped us when we went into the other games.
OK. Nick.
Yeah, Roy, a fortnight ago, you described Wilfried Zaha as a good recoverer from injuries. Has he lived up to that description over the past couple of weeks?
Yes, he has, because he's trained today, which would have been quicker, I think, than would have been the prognosis anyway for the strain that he picked up. But we still don't know whether that's going to make him available for the game on Saturday. It was nice to see him out on the training field today, because there was some doubt as to whether he would make that. But we'll have to see now tomorrow in particular how that pans out before we make any decision about the team on Saturday.
I would imagine you are in two minds, because everyone knows how important he is to the football club, but there's, I'm sure, in the back of your mind as well, there's this issue of rushing a player back. That can't be an easy call to make.
No, it's delicate. It's very delicate. And you're pretty much reliant upon your medical staff and the player. And sometimes that isn't as simple as all that either, because the player, in his desperation to play, will want to counter-say or countermand what the actual medical department are saying. So they do provide you with tricky situations. But the important thing is that at the moment we'll have to live with this situation with Wilf and the statistic that, you know, we haven't won a game for a long time now without him. But I'd like to see the number of games we play without him, and I'd like to see the results of those games. And I'd like to see the performances again in those games. Because, you know, as a team, we miss Wilf and we all want him to play, but we don't seriously believe, I think, the rest of us as a team, that our only chance is if he plays. That's a mass media thing. We were very disappointed on Saturday that we didn't play well, but the chances are, with that type of team performance, Wilf or no Wilf, the result would have been the same. Because you know, he doesn't have magical qualities, he's just a very good player.
On that subject, against Southampton, fact is you created an awful lot of chances to score. So, you know, the suggestion that Wolves are prevents you from scoring chances, that the chance count gets debunked, is the crucial thing for Crystal Palace at the moment, converting those chances?
Of course. Not just for Crystal Palace, I think probably there are so many people sitting giving press conferences today saying the same thing. That's what football is about, you know. It doesn't matter how well you play between the two penalty areas, at the final analysis it will be how well you've done at one end keeping the ball out, and there you're very dependent on your goalkeeper and your back players, and how you're, you know, creating chance at the other end. And the thing about statistics, and you know, I suppose they can often become facts as well, is there's often some sort of not deliberate lie, but there's a falsity sometimes often with that statistic that's pushed forward as a fact, because there's more underneath it all. And I've got to say that I think we rely more and more on statistics in football. It wasn't that long ago that you didn't know how many shots at goal teams had had and how many shots were on target, etc., etc. That's quite a recent thing. And I don't know who actually coined the very famous quote about lies, damn lies and statistics, but I've definitely got a lot of sympathy for the person who coined that quote, because I think a lot of noise can be made around the statistic, which when you really analyse what has gone on, turns out to be less than convincing and certainly less than proof.
And as a manager with, you know, 40 years' experience, these statistics are coming. At what point, this is probably a very difficult question to answer, what point does your gut take over and you say, do you know what, I'm actually just going to have to say thanks for those statistics, but my gut says this, or is it, does it work
well,
both ways?
It would be, I think you certainly do look at statistical evidence. We use it all the time in our training sessions. The thing I don't pay any attention to are shots at goal, shots on target, because basically speaking, quite often I'm more than happy for a team to have a shot at goal or even a shot on target, because it doesn't worry me at all that it's going to go into the back of the net. But there's lots of situations in the game where I'm on tenterhooks thinking this is going to be a goal against us, and we get away with it, and that's not a shot on target, and that's a, you know, we don't count blocks, we don't even count a shot that hits the post as a shot on target. We don't count balls whizzing across the 6-yard box where a guy's a millimetre away from putting his foot on the ball and scoring. That's not a shot, that's not a chance. So if I was ever going to really want to say, right, I want a really detailed statistical analysis of our performance in this game, I'd have someone looking at all of those things, and not just putting up 60% possession, 40% possession. Where's the possession? Is it, you know, who's making the passes? Is it the centre-back or is it the central midfield player? That's all those things. We don't get that. It's just they have 60%, they have 40%, they must be better. It's too unbelievably naive for me, total lacking in nuance. But I mean, these days, of course, a lot of statistics are for betting, aren't they? And I don't bet, so I suppose I'm the wrong man to be asking.
Ooh, you made it all the way to the end of the podcast. Congratulations. As a special present, hear the voice of social media manager Samuel Jordan, who has to sit here and listen to me record these every week. Sam, give us a preview of the Huddersfield game in one word.